You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast and listeners. Another brand new episode. Today's show, it is all about how we can make ourselves as fit and as healthy as possible. We always talk about making our horses as fit and healthy as possible, making sure that they get all the right nutrition, but we are turning the spotlight back on ourselves. And we have come to the man who is a friend of the show. He is a friend of US Eventing because he specializes in working with riders. It is none other than Coach Sando, Tony Sandoval. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Nicole.
It is our absolute pleasure. I always get so happy when I see your smiling face because you are going to tell us exactly what we should be doing. First of all, as I say, you know, we always pay so much attention to our horses. If they have the slightest niggle, we've got the physio, we've got the vet, everybody is on hand. Yet with ourselves, I think riders are particularly notorious for probably just not looking after ourselves very well. Is that a fair assessment?
That is such a fair assessment. Over the weekend, I was running a clinic and there was a couple of people that I was talking to about. And I said, just jokingly, if I saw your bookkeeping and I saw two columns, one column was expenses to keep your horses healthy. And then the other column would be the expenses to keep you healthy. I didn't even get to finish my question and everybody laughed. And they said, yeah, point taken. And if you have to see it on paper to know, oh, wow, yeah, I don't really take care of myself as well as I should.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things, you know, isn't it? Everybody is busy and family and the barn is busy and all the rest of it. But actually, there are things that you can do, hopefully, that will make a real difference in kind of making sure that you're as fit and as healthy as possible. Because ultimately, if you're as fit and healthy as possible, then you're only going to give your horse the best chance as well. So first of all, where do we start? What should we be doing in an ideal world? Where do we begin?
I think the first place you have to begin is in your viewpoint or the mental picture that you have and that you prioritize your health. So what I have been doing first and foremost is trying to paint this picture for people to understand how they can integrate fitness, self-care into a day that already is very busy and has other priorities. So how can I help you prioritize yourself? Because we can all have other things that take priority, but eventually you are going to have to pay the price for your decisions. So you have to pick your hard. You want it to be hard for you to be sick, or is it going to be hard for you to schedule some time to be healthy? But best believe that you are going to have to pay the price. And so when people understand that harsh reality, then it's like, well, how much time do I have to spend? And this is a conversation that we have so that you can mentally prepare to take any steps. And fitness has been pushed on us this time that has to be an hour, and it has to be blood, sweat, and tears, and it has to be very difficult. Fitness or self-care can be something as 10 minutes of breathing, 10 minutes of walking after your breakfast meal. So I think the ideal situation would be step one, kind of sit down within your own thoughts and figure out what fitness means to you long-term. Think about the values that you have. Think about how all of these things that you value need you to be healthy. Because then when you start to ingrain an intrinsic anchor to this new journey that you're about to take on or restart, you restart it with the new purpose, with new fuel, and with the new lens. Because I failed so many times to bring just the meat and potatoes, if you will, of fitness and trying to put something that everybody knows is healthy. But why don't we do it? And it's a whole psychological thing. And a lot of my colleagues deal with the same thing. And we've all come to the conclusion, we have to teach people how to start very small, how to appreciate themselves, we as humans are innately always really well at viewing all the things we do bad. And then we have this bad connotation about ourselves or starting something new or something that is impossible. And we help people through this journey to make sure that they understand, let's start with the very basic goals and then work our way towards something a little bit more each time. But it can be something so simple as getting up in the morning, seeing some sunlight, start to time your circadian rhythm, get the sunlight to give you the good joys if weather permits, going out for a walk, and letting your body just start to sync up, start to move blood around. And that is fitness, believe it or not. And for some people, just doing that will get them going in the right direction.
And I think it is kind of making those healthy little habitual changes that actually build the bigger picture. So all of those tiny little pieces of the jigsaw puzzle ultimately kind of build upon each other and put the foundations in place. So in that case then, we started making some healthy changes. We're sort of more aware of it mentally as to what we're going to do. We're kind of very much at the acceptance point of kind of where we're starting. How do you then find something that is appropriate? Because one of the things that you really specialize in is helping riders specifically. So talk to me a little bit about that and the kind of things that riders should be doing in order to help them with their riding and their strength and fitness in that sort of area as well.
Okay, so this has a couple layers to it. And again, the more I've worked with riders, the more I take a deep dive into the actual needs. Because in a world where there's so much information on what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing, there's some truths that work, and they work immediately with people. And it starts with, number one, making sure that you are doing some type of, we call it NEAT, which is non-exercise activity. And the last one is thermogenesis. So basically what that means is the more you move, the more your body is put in positions that it's built to do as far as getting the blood to circulate, getting steps in. It is going to help you. So when you're ready to perform or to ride, that your body's already been in movement. What kills people is that you go from the desk to the yard and there's nothing in between and you're asking your body to do something athletic. So number one, that I give every one of the riders that I work with is start to, if you have a very desk bound job or just either standing for a long time or sitting, you have to make some time that you can get in some steps. So the goal would be to be somewhere around 7,000 to 10,000 steps a day. And you can break it up. However, it doesn't have to be all in one sitting. But being or starting to move throughout the day is something that is going to help you be able to manage the stress of riding. And when I mean by stress, it's something that the body has to account for. That's stress. So manage stress of riding and start to get all the systems in your body to coordinate themselves, to start working well, whether it's something called the lymphatic system, which starts to drain all the sewage that the body creates to make you feel good, starts getting blood with nutrients into working muscles. Movement is what should be focused on at first. Once you get moving, I think the next step is, okay, now to start really getting into some foundational movement patterns, some exercises that will help you when you're riding. And the main goal of that should be to make you aware of your body. So whatever you choose to do, whether it's something very restorative like yoga. Now, yoga can also be hard work, but a lot of people would take yoga for restorative or Pilates that kind of combines a little bit of strengthening and restorative nature. Your goal should be to do things that are going to make your body aware and that you enjoy. Because what I've also done is I've given people like, this is what you need, but sometimes they don't enjoy that and therefore they don't do it. So if they don't do it, then it becomes the wrong thing to focus on. So I would say once you pick your exercise that you want to do, make it very low impact because your brain is going to be like, I can do this. And it doesn't wear you out to the point that it's such a negative experience. And then the next time you want to go in and do it again, you have all these thoughts like, oh my God, that was so hard. Because it was such a far reach where you started from to now where that class that kicked your butt, that is very difficult. So there's where, again, people set themselves up. So I would say once you get your movement patterns going with walking, Then you can start picking your exercises that are very low impact that your brain can handle. And it is, yoga helps writers. Pilates helps writers. But don't stop there. No, that's just a phase of what you need to get to a place where now you have more tools that you can take to the saddle. So once I get people to get to move and understand their body, then I go, okay, now you have some habits that will be able to help you for strength training. And I think that's where you want to end up, doing exercises that that have resistance training in mind, whether it be from a band or it be from something like a kettlebell or dumbbell or barbell. But that is now the next progression that should be added into someone's fitness routine. But the problem is when people try to do it all at one time and they're not used to it, or they think, well, okay, right, I'm starting to get my fitness, I got to do it all. And it's a crash and burn scenario every single time.
Basically, we should treat ourselves as if we're a horse. You know,
yes.
I mean, essentially, yes.
Very, yeah, I'm taking my long-winded answer, yes.
Yes, but we would never dream of kind of thinking, okay, do you know what? My horse has been out in the field for, you know, 6 weeks, so I'm going to get on and take him for a big old gallop up the, you know, canter up the gallops or something. Like, we just wouldn't. We wouldn't dream of it. And yet people stick on their running shoes and think, and I've done this, listeners, I'm guilty of this. Yeah. Stick on my running shoes and think, oh, I'm going to go and run a 10K. Well, I don't, because I die by about 3K. And actually then it hurts so much that you don't bother doing it afterwards, because your brain says, oh no, that was really quite stressful. If somebody is already pretty active and they have an active job and you know they're already pretty good with their fitness, but actually they want to take it to the next level, what about them as well? Is it the strength that they should be looking at as opposed to the cardio? Because that's, I think, a really important point as well, that actually some people probably think, listen to this and think, yeah, do you know what? I'm pretty good, but I just want to be that bit better.
Yeah. So now for those people, now the conversation is, what type of tools do you need in the saddle? And if strength is a tool that you haven't been focusing on, then that's what you should be getting onto, is getting in the resistance training. And this is the reason why, because here's something that I've learned. I'm going to backtrack a little bit. As I do these rider assessments, I try to help riders fill in the gaps between lessons that they have with their trainers and what are the results that they're having with their horse. And sometimes, I would say a lot of times, people will tell me exactly what they're getting yelled at by their trainer for the past 2 years, and they understand the concept, but they just don't seem to get to the point where they can do the things physically so that they can make the adjustments that the trainers have been working on them. And a lot of times it's strength. You just don't have the strength to be able to make those adjustments. And so when you start implementing some strength training, very specific to what you need, yes, that's the goal. But in general, just going and having a program that focuses on what I like to do is whole body training, full body training, not something like a leg day or an arm day or a shoulder day. That model is based for physique. But riders will go to that because that's what's very popular, is bikini training and look good for summer training. And what you fail to understand is the body, yes, that's one way to optimize that goal, is to look good in a bathing suit or whatever, you know, you got to look good in your breeches. And you know, riders see a lot of pictures of people with nice clothes, and they see the show jumpers with all their nice show attire. I get that. And that's part of the equation. But when you're trying to get better at riding, there has to be a level of specificity that you have to be able to account for with strength training. That is going to get there. Because as soon as I do something with someone that has to involve waking up a muscle, giving a little exercise in the clinic, they automatically can get into positions. And I tell them, this is a magic trick. I just kind of woke up some muscles that haven't been working for a long time. It's going to go away. The way to cement it is by doing strength training in these particular areas, so that your body now goes, ah, now I can shift my hip a little bit X to this position or X to doing this other movement. But it's hard to do that when you know you need to do a certain movement, but you just can't find the strength to do it. So then you compensate.
So what are the biggest things for riders then that you come across that actually are things that you can tweak in training at home that mm-hmm. make a big impact on their riding?
Proper core engagement. I didn't say strengthening because I think everybody works on that. It's proper core engagement. And here I'm going to give everybody like a visual. Hopefully this makes sense because it's always hard when I'm on podcasts to say, try this exercise. It's going to really help you. Everybody knows a standard. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, have you got a video that we can link in the show? Because then we can link people to it.
I can actually make one. Because I've just done this new way. I can make one and we can link it to the show notes.
Oh, bless you. That's very kind. Okay, there you go, listeners. We've twisted his arm. I put him on the spot. He didn't have a choice. What I'm trying to say is that we'll be able to link it out from this show as well.
Yes.
So you can go and watch it too. Okay, so carry on. Sorry.
So if everyone can picture doing a standard side plank. So you lay on your side, your forearm is on the ground, and your elbow is under your shoulder. And everybody's like, oh no, I hate side planks. But this is just the example about proper core engagement. When you get on the side plank, and you can either extend your legs so you're straight, or you can have a knee bent position so it makes the levers shorter, so it makes it easier to do the side plank. You can even use your off arm to put it on the ground to give you extra support. This is just an example. When you get up in the side plank, if you take we're going to take deep breaths and we're going to breathe in through our nose. And when we exhale, we're going to exhale like we're trying to knock down the wall that's in front of us. You're trying to put out a fire. Just think about something that you need to expel air fast and hard. And when you exhale, you are retracting your core, meaning you're sucking in your tummy as you're expanding. So you do that 5 times while you're in the plank position. You cannot take a break from the plank. You have to do this 5 times and then you take a break. When I do that exercise, the amount of mobility that comes from the hips, people get amazed because everybody does the stretching, all the yogas, all the things that they do to try to get more hip mobility for their riding, and it doesn't stick. And the reason it doesn't stick is because there's this scenario that happens in our body where, and we call it proximal stability, will impact distal mobility, which means if you are strong in your core, for this specific example, it will allow your hips to be more mobile. If you just keep working on stretching, the body's like, you know what? I like it. It's very controlled. But when we are riding, we are not strong or stable. So we are only going to limit the amount of movement that you can do. And I guess another example would be a horse example. If you are on a horse and it senses that you are not stable, then its gait gets compromised and it gets shorter. So when I can get a rider to feel stable and to use their aids and themselves properly, magically, the horse gets a longer stride, gait is better. And they're wondering, wow, my horse feels so much better. Oh my God, I feel more supple. How did you do that? I made you more stable, which made him more mobile. But if he understands that with every stride, you might fall off, he's going to shorten everything. And that's what the human body does. So core engagement, doing that exercise, and then doing an exercise like a stretch. If you did like any type of stretch from the hip and you were like, oh, this is the one I really struggle with. Pigeon, for example. And if pigeon felt awful, you do that core engagement and then you do the pigeon and then you're going to see, oh my God, how did this feel so good? I did nothing but do this core exercise. And that should let you know I need to do proper core engagement and do some other activities.
So what can people do then to improve their core engagement? Is it simply exercises such as that? Or is there anything else that they can really look to do?
For the strengthening, that's what engages the core. If there's certain exercises that bode very well for riders to be able to be proficient at, because that actually puts their muscles that they need to help stabilize their hips in order. And here is the little secret about that breathing. It activates a muscle called your diaphragm and it helps stabilize because you're breathing so hard out that your diaphragm has no choice but to activate all the muscles in the core. And then people go, wow, that felt weird. And I can see where it would work. And even lower than that, when I go to clinics, when I say, okay, I want you to take a deep breath and breathe out, the amount of people that don't know how to actually breathe in and out, I laugh and I'm going, that's why I'm not a physio, because my bedside manner is horrible. I am not a good clinician. I am a meathead. And I'm like, don't you ever breathe? Oh my God. And we have mouth breathers. We have shallow breathers. We have people that are about to pass out from breathing so much. So that's like another thing about trying to be better as a writer is you have to learn how to breathe.
Give us a quick rundown. How do we breathe properly?
So when you're breathing, you should be able to take a deep breath in through your nose for 2 seconds and breathe out through your mouth for 2 seconds. Now, when you breathe out through your mouth, if you just open your mouth and let air out, that's not necessarily breathing out with intention. You're just like letting air escape. You should control your air as you're going out. Now, when you're breathing out, that's when you should retract your core and feel that you're sucking in your tummy. And then when you breathe in, you do the same thing. Your tummy expands a little bit. Breathe out, your tummy retracts. When you do this often, it will go to the saddle. It travels to the saddle, meaning you're going to transfer that to the saddle. And you will never have to think about your core being engaged, or nobody has to tell you about using your core when you ride, because you're using it as you're breathing. And unless you stop breathing, you're always going to use your core, and it's killing two birds with one stone. But oh my God, the amount of coaching that I have to do, I always think I am thinking so far ahead. I have to regress everything because people need to learn how to do step one, breathe.
So in terms of breathing then, because it is something that a lot of people do, most people I would imagine do it without realizing.
Oh yeah.
You're not actually thinking about breathing. So how much sort of conscious thought do we need to put into our breathing for it to become a good habit that actually we probably need to think about it less?
I love that question because it comes back to the very, very first thing that I said about understanding the basics of fitness and just getting up and looking at the sun or going on a walk. You should also anchor a little morning routine, just like having like a glass of water by your nightstand so you can drink that first thing as you wake up, is to set about a 2 to 3 minute timer on your phone and practice breathing. Breathe in for 2 seconds, hold your breath for 2 seconds, breathe out for 2 seconds, hold for 2 seconds. That's called box breathing. As you get better, then you can go 4 seconds inhale, four second hold, 4 second exhale, 4 second hold. Just that phase. People spend so much time because they can't hold their breath after they exhale for 4 seconds because they feel the anxiety of the day. The cortisol levels are so high, they can't breathe in for 4 seconds without feeling like they're going to pass out. They can't breathe out for 4 seconds because they exhale so fast and they're used to it. There's no calmness. So starting in the morning and right when you wake up, when you should be the calmest, that is a good measuring stick to go, what's going on with me? I'm feeling a little stressed. Let me slow it down. That way I can get into what's called the parasympathetic state, rest and digest, and which makes it a little bit easier if you're a breakfast person to eat. But if you stress out and you've got things going on, and the first thing you can go to is, I need coffee and I need to go to work, that will catch up to you. That habit catches up to you.
It's probably one of those things that actually when you implement it and you become used to doing that, say you do it first thing in the morning, if you then have a really, really stressful situation, that actually you can just have 5 minutes in a corner and just do that exercise and it will help you.
Yes, research shows that, and I use this from one of my good friends. He has an app called Aim 7. And I learned from him that 5 minutes, 7 days a week will make such an impact on your mental health. 5 minutes, 7 days a week, making it a habit. Impact on your mental health. And he has all the research to provide this proof that such a small thing gets you to a point where you can manage stress, because you don't eliminate it, but you manage stress so much better. And it's a skill that I'm teaching. I work with the UK, University of Kentucky eventing team. I'm teaching those women how to manage stress from school, from life, for performance. So we end our training sessions with a 5-minute breathing session. And we've worked our way up so we can hold our breath longer as we're exhaling. That way they understand how they feel. And when I don't do it, when we run out of time, they always will say, "We'll stay extra. We want to do this. This really helps me. It's really helping me when I'm trying to study." And I'm like, "Huh?" They bought in. I mean, before they would have said, "Bye, see you later. I don't want to do this dumb breathing." But now they look forward to it.
5 minutes, 7 days a week. That's not a lot, is it? You know, we can easily lose 50 minutes scrolling Instagram. Five minutes. Can I ask you, when, you know, everybody is so busy and there's always that sort of, you know, it's only 5 minutes, but if we were trying to incorporate things into daily life, so, you know, maybe people are down at the barn, maybe they are sitting at their desk. Are there any things that actually you can really incorporate into daily life, daily tasks, even in the barn or at your desk, that actually you can kill two birds with one stone, that you can actually tick off that while you're doing something else?
I think that question, it's sometimes it's difficult because people get overwhelmed. So I have, and this is just real life scenarios, I'll have some clients that would like something, like you just said, to do at the barn, to do at home, and they're really all in. And some people, they use the barn as, that's the place where I just think about me and my horse. And I don't, doing a pre-ride warm-up, I understand it, but maybe I can do it at home and not at the barn, because at the barn, I just want to be about my horse. So I think saying, if you are that person, before you leave to the barn, to the yard, do something there that gets your body ready. So even if it's a little bit of a longer drive, but you have something that you've done, like breathing, like doing a few stretches that help your body loosen up, even though you're going to get in a car. But most of the time that will last. It will last about an hour-ish when you stretch out. So doing some basic calisthenics that doesn't have to be too hard. I tell people, if you warm up for 5 minutes and you're breathing during your warm-up, you've killed two birds with one stone. Then you can get to the barn and start doing your deal. Because when I go to barns and I watch lessons, or I just watch the art of, to me, it's still very novel to watch people take a curry brush, do the proper things to their horse, put tack them up. I don't know. It's always fascinating to me to see those things, but I get it. They just want to do those things and then get out to their lesson or get out to the ride. So very few people will actually do things at the barn, but now I understand why. At first, it was very easy for me to bark the orders and say, "Here's what I want you to do before you tack up your horse, find a spot in your tack room and do these exercises." And then when I go and I, again, repeating myself, and I actually see that, their hour that they have, I'm like, okay, you have to do this before you leave home and have it at the comfort of your home, I guess. And just so that you can do something like, "Hey, let's do that core engagement exercise. Let's do a couple of like three exercises to mobilize your hip. And then off we go."
It's funny, isn't it? Because we get on our horses and, again, would never dream of not warming them up or cooling them off, you know, after a hard piece of work. And actually, people can be much more sort of guilty of not doing it themselves. Like we always think about our animals and horses as to what we're going to do for them. But actually, it is very valid to people as well. How much of that, you know, for our horses, warming them up properly, making sure they're cooled off properly, helps to prevent injury, it helps keep them fit and healthy. How much of that is also valid to people? If we warm up properly, we are going to hurt less, our body is going to feel better and be stronger, and we get less likely to pick up little niggles and injuries along the way.
It's so important. And especially as you age, the thing that you can always have, and it's very difficult to get in the habit of, is mobility. We start losing range of motion as we stop moving. So things like strength, people find it easier that if you're fit to pick up resistance weight and do the proper training. But when you start losing ranges of motion because you're only moving, again, within this defined box all the time, then the body goes, "Well, we don't need to do all these other movements. Let's start. Why do we need to? Let's just start condensing our range of motion." And that's when you get in trouble. So being able to do these warm-ups and just start your day, even if you're not working out, but doing some things that get you moving will keep your range of motion. But as far as performance, it enhances not only the physical component of it, but also the mental part. It puts your brain in the state where now we're going to move. Now we're giving muscles the access to ranges of motion that maybe you haven't had throughout the day because you've been very sedentary. It helps with lubrication of muscles and tendons and joints. So your body, if it moves, movement is medicine. It will do a lot of the things needed to keep you healthy without taking so many pills or all the things that are quick fixes. Movement is difficult. It's difficult to get into your daily practice, but once you do, it is enough medicine that you need to be able to do what you enjoy longer.
Movement is medicine. I absolutely love that. That is brilliant. If we do have a niggle that we know bothers us, so lower back, for example, probably a pretty obvious thing in plenty of riders that they struggle with their back, or, and you know, it's something that just niggles away at them and they kind of manage it and they just cope with it. Ultimately, how much should they actually get the root of the problem rather than mask the symptoms of it? Because, you know, again, our horse doesn't feel quite right, we get the vet out or we get the physio to come and see them or the, you know, the chiropractor. How much of that should we be doing as well?
A lot, because here's a perfect example. Again, I really enjoy running these clinics because I get to learn the sport and I get the opportunity to work with so many people that have different issues. And even though they have the same symptoms, they have different issues that cause the symptoms. So we're going to take your example for low back. Low back, to me, is always an expression of something that you're doing that is making your low back hurt. Yeah, so riding, when I watch a lot of riders, there's nothing vigorous that would cause immediate low back pain, meaning that is the direct root cause, low back. Low back hurts because something else is making you change your position, and now we have to use the low back as a mobilizer instead of a stabilizer. So remember that core engagement helps you stabilize your trunk and spine. If you go out and you start twisting and shaking your head or doing something weird with your lower leg that affects your position and your low back now has to mobilize and do something that it's not supposed to, there's where the low back happens. So if you are bound up in your ankle per se and you didn't warm up your ankle, work on some mobility, get you right in your stirrups, that affects your lower leg, which affects your upper leg, which affects how your hips work, and ultimately how your low back is, then you're going to be struggling with that low back pain. When we start to loosen things like ankles, maybe work a little bit on some calves, little things that I'll go, something's going on. Oh, you got a plate in your ankle. That's why your low back hurts. Because your mobility is such that now you have to twist and hollow out so that you can feel like you have proper connection in your upper legs, and more specifically, your groin muscles, your adductors, from a little position change, that you did. And once I can get your ankle to move a certain way, I can maybe strengthen some of the surrounding muscles, and then I can have you feel different in the saddle, but you don't feel low back hurt, and I didn't touch your low back. That to me is like, see, this is why we need to warm up. This is why you need to pay attention to every joint that needs to be mobile and every joint that has to be stable, and try to keep them as is. Because if you start, well, I'll say you won't notice when you compensate, because that's the brain's job, is to just make you do the things that you're supposed to do without asking you permission. Hey, is it okay if we do? No, that's not what the brain does. It's going to put you in a position that you look like a question mark when you're riding, but at least you're riding, because it has to stay away from pain. So warming up all the joints that you are specific to you is so important, so that you can have the tools needed to be pain-free when you ride.
I think that makes a huge amount of sense. We could kind of go down the so many different routes, and ultimately, listeners, we're only scratching the surface on this show. But one thing I did want to ask you about is nutrition and where that ties in, how people can build good habits to incorporate into making sure that they're appropriately fueled for what they're trying to achieve?
Mm-hmm. So the it's always good to understand what the goal should be, because if you understand what the goal should be, then you know how to build your habits to get to that goal. I think the target moves so much because of social media and what's popular and what people like to do, whether it's intermittent fasting or keto or carnivore, whatever it is. It's always good to identify what the goal should be and then how you are going to build up the habits. Because what I've also seen is, say you are love a certain type of eating habit or lifestyle. You get married to that lifestyle. This is what you love to do. Most of the time, if your habits are based from a diet, meaning calorie deficit is why keto is what it is. Calorie deficit is a lot of times why intermittent fasting is what it is. All these things have that in common. You eat less food. And if that's how you base your habits, you are going to be at, for the most part, eating less food for a very, very, very long time, which produces hormonal changes, energy level, overall inflammation. I mean, all these things happen when people undereat for a sustained amount of time, lack of sleep, stress increases, and they don't even know it because they've decided that the goal would be, I like to eat a little bit of food. And I base my decisions on long-term eating habits on something that is supposed to be short-term. And people don't understand that. So the first thing that you have to do is understand how to have a balanced approach to your meals where you're eating maintenance calories. Don't be afraid to eat a lot of food. And if you're thinking of that way, because people, when I say just eat maintenance food, I am eating maintenance food. And then I do a little deep dive on how many calories they're eating. It's about 1,000 calories. There's nobody that could, no human, adults, that on 1,000 calories would seem to be fine. Your brain does a great job on giving you the signals, I'm fine, but you're actually not. When you're riding, you probably get stressed out a lot. You probably forget things. You might choke during a dressage test because you forgot something because deep down inside you're hungry. But you're fine. So for me, understanding what maintenance calories is and basing your habits off of these three principles. Number one, have to have protein in your diet. That has to be your foundation block, protein. Now, for a lot of people, 0.8 or 1 gram per body weight, whether it's kilograms or it's, I say per pound of body weight. So in kgs, it would probably be 2.2, right? The conversion. But having that as your base is what the goal should be. Protein does so much for us that should not be discarded.
So for every pound of body weight, you would
pound is 0.8 to 1 gram. 1 gram, 0.8 to 1 gram of protein.
A day.
Yes. Okay. Now, I would also say ideal body weight for some people, that is easier. And the little caveat to that is if you're way under, if you're like, wait, I probably like a hard-boiled egg, maybe a protein bar. And then at dinner, I have something like 3 to 4 ounces of some type of protein. You're probably somewhere in that 50 to 60 grams a day. You can't go from there to 150 grams tomorrow. Your stomach is going to hate you because it's so used to not eating enough. So you have to make sure that you gradually add a little bit of food, maybe like an egg and a half of if it's doing a hard-boiled egg, an egg and a half, something very small, because you have to train your stomach, your digestive system, to start taking in all this food. But that should be your goal. If you are taking inventory and you're like, wow, I am so under on this macronutrient called protein, start taking some steps to understand how you can add more food, more protein in your day. Once you get that, then you can start doing on the next phase, which is fruits and vegetables. Somehow fruits got demonized because they're sugar. And I don't know how that happened, but fruits are good for you. Vegetables are good for you. And if you have those as the second tier of your meal plan or meal, you're going to be in a good spot. And then, well, the last thing is making sure that you're hydrated. when we don't have electrolytes, not just water, but electrolytes like sodium, potassium, magnesium, and chloride for some people, it makes it very hard for your body to get energy to be disposed into us so that we can use it. It makes it very difficult for us to function with any system in our body when we're not properly hydrated, not just with water, but with electrolytes. If you follow those three things, the carbs will come in. I'm sure people won't have any problems with carbs. It's proteins, fruits and vegetables, and staying hydrated. Those should be the three staples that you work on, and varies at a very small level. If your hydration is an issue, a little cup of water right when you wake up and little cups of water as you get on. If you're at 64 ounces, maybe 32 ounces for the day, you're not going to shoot for 100 ounces. You're going to shoot for maybe 40 ounces, right? Because then you'll be all day in that restroom and won't be able to leave.
It's funny as well, isn't it? You know, it's finding what works for you. So I am, in my mind, a little bit odd because I can't drink really cold water. Really cold water, just it turns me off completely. I just don't like it. But if I have tepid water or water at room temperature, great, can drink it all day long, quite happy. Mm-hmm. My husband thinks I'm mental because I'll pour a glass of water and then top it up with hot water. And that suits me. But actually, I know that's what I like and that's what I can drink. And so I guess I find that's, you know, a habit that I've got into because I know it's much more palatable for me to do. Mm-hmm. Show days. We're busy, we're stressed. We look at the catering van as we go into the show and quite frankly, vomit a little bit into our mouths at the thought of eating anything when we're going to go down the center line. What can we do to make sure that we're not sort of getting, or to make sure that we are getting everything that we need, actually when we need it, because a show day is an important day. It's the last thing I'm thinking about is that.
Right. So this will go back to your habits that we talked about earlier. So I'm going to paint a scenario for myself. I wake up and I'm getting ready for show day. I have a 8:30 time that I have to be there. So I'm waking up about 5 because I'm nervous and I have to get down to the horse park. I have to make sure that all the things are taken care of. When am I going to eat? It's so early in the morning. So what I would do is I would make sure that the night before I had a good meal to make sure that I have some energy reserved for the following. Now, if I can wake up and the first thing I do is maybe go on a 10-minute walk, either at the treadmill or outside if it's feasible, to calm myself down. 10 minutes. Calm myself down. It doesn't have to be a brisk walk. I don't have to put a backpack with weights in it. All I'm trying to do is get my brain into this parasympathetic mode and breathe while I'm walking so I can start getting my brain into the present. I'm walking. I'm breathing. That's all I'm thinking about. My brain is going to start going off to, oh my God, do I have this? Oh my God, do I have that? I bring it back to walking and breathing. Before I know it, I'll start getting calm enough that I start getting a little hungry. And at that point, I can decide I am going to have something because I have an early showtime. I can have something like some electrolytes and water. That way I can start getting my body going well. And if I am someone that I eat breakfast, I can have something very small like a meal replacement shake, just something that will absorb really fast. That way, by the time I start showing, it's very early. I won't have that in my stomach. It got absorbed really quick because I was in a rest and digest nervous system state. So that will totally digest. By 8 o'clock, I'm probably already thinking I'm a little hungry, but not to the point where I can't focus on what I'm doing. And then I go and do my test. All is good. When I am done, I make sure that I take care of my horse. I do a little stretching. I calm down. I start breathing again. I start to now think about the things that I did during the test, and I can make little notes so that I can write down what happened so that it's very fresh, so that emotions are gone and I can make actionable items that I can work on. And then I will have something to recover. So now I'll have a proper meal that's going to have protein, fruits and vegetables, and maybe a little carbs towards the end. And that's how I would do that scenario.
So in that case then, if we wrap this up, three things that everybody can take away from this recording and this podcast, and actually that they can implement into their lives on a day-to-day basis. I think breathing's got to be one of them. Learn how to breathe properly. Tony, I'm taking your first one. What else would you add in there?
I think breathing, and then really taking a sit down and looking at what your values are and writing them down and understanding what to you is important as far as your health and wellness. Because no matter how many tips I give people, if you really don't value being healthy, then a lot of these tips are not going to be useful, helpful, whatever. So for me, it really does help to spend a little bit of time and going, what can we do to make these things something that you perceive valuable? And then we can build better habits that ultimately lead you to your goal of where you want to be, wherever that is. Define that. Understand what that means to you. And again, it takes a little bit of work, because if you just try to dive in, you're going to fail because your brain doesn't perceive that as something valuable and that you should prioritize. And you will never have time for that. Never have time for fitness if you don't find real deep prioritization of it.
I think that's a really good point. Okay. Listeners, we've got breathing, prioritization. Was there a third one? Have I missed the third one?
Let's make sure that we're eating proteins, veggies, and fruits. And don't be afraid if you start getting a little extra calories. Most likely, I think from all the people that I've worked with, everybody undereats. So I'm sure that if you eat a little extra, it'll be just fine. But have those good foundational building blocks so that your body can have the proper fuel.
There you go, listeners. Sounds so simple. Tony, honestly, when we talk like this, it sounds so simple. I think there's something there for everybody to take from that, regardless of where they are in their sort of fitness or nutrition journey. Hopefully there are some top tips in there for you. Thank you so much. It is a pleasure, as always, to have you on the show. And I've enjoyed it as much as ever. So thank you.
Thank you as well.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you found something useful. Who knew that actually learning how to breathe would be so useful? One of those things, isn't it, that we all think we just do it, we don't think about it, but actually it makes a massive, massive difference if we just give it a little bit of extra thought process. So that is your homework, listeners. There you go. I've said it out loud. I will do the same. Listeners, will be back very soon with more on the USCA official podcast. Big thank you, as always, for tuning in, and we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening to the USCA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.